Okay, we have been studying stewardship. And if you recall the very first class that we had, we went over these two points about creating an understanding of what our responsibilities were, not only in our worship to God, but also in service to our fellow man, to be good stewards of God's grace. And the thing that I talked about in that very first class was that this is not a study of money, that we use money from different times as the vehicle to drive a lot of the examples that we talk about when we study stewardship, but in and of itself, that's not what the lesson series is about. Now, with that said, I also in that first class talked about the number of scriptures that there were that had to do with money. About 8% of the New Testament covers that subject, or money or financial things of one nature or form or another. And so we can't ignore it. And so this morning we're not going to ignore it. So we're going to talk about money. And before you roll your eyes too far back in your head, we're not going to talk so much about the giving part of it. We can cover that if we want to talk about what our responsibilities are in pretty much one verse. I want to look at what the giving habits were, an historical view of what giving meant, not only to the Jews, but to civilization in general. We have, to show what God expected of the Israelites, especially when we get to this study, because we're not giving under those terms, but we can certainly learn a lot about it. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 1 and 2. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so you also are to do. On the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper, so that there be no collecting when I come. From the ESV and from the New King James and from the New American Standard, the NIV, which years ago I liked, and then I got some kind of where I didn't like it, and I go back to it occasionally for some things. But it says, in keeping with your income, in place of as you may prosper. And I like that as I was putting this class together, because God is not expecting us to do something beyond what we are able to do. God is not expecting us to put ourselves in difficult situations, in the poorhouse, so to speak. But God does expect us to put Him first and ourselves second. And so we have this concept of sacrificial giving that we cannot escape no matter how much we might want to. We can't. When we talk about this subject this morning, we're going to use the term tithing. You know what it means, right? Just simply to give or to take 10%. We need to understand that there is no scripture in the New Testament that requires that. God doesn't talk about it in that way in the scriptures that have to do with our Christian walk. But we need to understand what the principles were that God put into place, especially for the Israelites in the Old Testament. And so we'll be talking about that. Just keep in mind that when we're talking about what drives our giving, what drives our heart, God's command is pretty clear here in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 1 and 2, as we may prosper. I asked a question a couple of weeks ago about what you put first in your life, because we've talked about things when we first started the class. We talked about everything belongs to God. The earth belongs to God. The second class was we are not our own. We belong to God. We talked about time, the importance of time. We talked about our abilities. Last week, we talked about the importance of a soul. What is our stewardship responsibility when it comes to souls, our own plus others? So these are things that, as we've gone through this class, we've made the point that this is about what's in our heart, this issue of stewardship. And not forgetting one of the points that we made early on, in that God expects us to give back. But those things that God gives us, there is an implication that when we give them back, we are to give them back better than what they were when God gave them to us. So keeping those things in mind, we'll get through some of the things this morning in today's class and regarding specifically giving. We see this typically through the lens of the Israelites. We don't think about it in terms of those nations that were around the Israelites. They gave also, though, and we've got a lot of documentation. We've got writings from scrolls and writings from tablets, and we've got writings on the inscriptions on tombs, and we've got all kinds of things that talk about those nations around Israel and their giving. As a matter of fact, Egypt had over 2,000 gods. And among them, we find these writings. I have not, and these are from the leadership of the Egyptians, the pharaohs and types of things, found especially in burial crypts. I have not cut short the rations of the temples. I have not diminished the offerings of the God. I have not stolen the property of God. It was important even to nations who didn't know who the true God was, that worshiped false gods, yet it was important for those nations to give. If it was important for them, how much more so is it important for the Israelites? How much more so is it important for us to give as well? The inhabitants of the Nile Valley supported their temples by both mandatory and voluntary contributions, and we know this at least 2100 BC. Everything. 10% of their servants, 10% of the spoils of war, their cattle, their crops, it didn't matter what it was, 10% of it went to serve their one of 2,000 gods, whoever I guess the god of the week was on that particular occasion. So they gave. The Babylonians did the same thing. The Babylonians supported their temples by mandatory and voluntary contributions. I quoted 2100 earlier, didn't I, BC? That was included for this, for the Babylonians. The Greeks paid tithes to their gods before they paid tribute to their kings. Romans consistently made pledges and tithes to a particular god. Usually it was Hercules. This was expected of them. And it was expected of the very poor to the very rich. We have clay tablets of Assyria and Egypt that talk about tithing that's 3,500 years before Jesus. Pagan nations gave tithes to their deities even before the days of Abraham. So, and all I did was just do this briefly to make us think about what the rest of the world is doing. Who gave that first sacrifice that we have knowledge of? Cain and Abel, right? Who gave them the rules by which to sacrifice? God did. We don't have record of it. How did they know? What did they do? Somewhere God communicated that with them. How do we know that? Because one of them was found not to be good and the other was found to be acceptable. Cain gave what? Fruits of the ground. Was it acceptable or unacceptable? It was not acceptable. Why? I don't know. It's not really important, other than it wasn't acceptable. Abel's was. God put in the hearts of man something that caused them to recognize, that causes us to recognize that there's someone higher than we are. Unfortunately, that's part of the problem that we're losing today in our society with moral relativism. We have decided that we can be our own gods. But from the beginning, it was not so. And so God gave man that desire to give back, and man did it. And we go from that time, and we have civilizations, all of these that we've talked about. And even though they're giving to the wrong god, they understand the reason or the purpose for it. Genesis chapter, we just talked about that. We'll go to Genesis chapter 8, verse 20. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took of every clean animal and of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. Why did God have Noah take all of those animals? Well, to repopulate the earth, but what else was to happen with it? Because this is Noah getting off the ark. What's the first thing that Noah does when he gets off the ark? Sacrifices. Gets off that ark, thanks God for all, for saving the eight of them. Gives a sacrifice of those particular animals. Genesis chapter 14, verses 18 through 20. Do you remember what David, I got everybody in my head all in the wrong places this morning. Do you remember what Abraham had to do regarding Lot when he went to save him? And he had to fight his way in and get Lot and rescue him and get him back out. And in Genesis chapter 14, verse 18 through 20, he comes across Melchizedek. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High, and he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abraham of the God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High who has delivered your enemies into your hands." And he, as Abraham, gave Melchizedek 10%. And we know this because of being corroborated through Hebrews chapter 7, verse 1 through 4. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings, blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of it. What caused Abraham to make that tithe to that particular king? Now there's more to this, okay? But the point is that Abraham, in this particular circumstance, long before Moses got the tablets from God on Sinai, recognized that there was a tithe that needed to be done, a sacrifice that needed to be made because God had blessed them in what they had done. Remember Jacob in his dream? Jacob in Genesis chapter 28, verse 18 through 22. Then Jacob rose early in the morning and he took the stone that he had put at his head and he set it up as a pillar. And he poured oil on top of it and he called the name of the place Bethel. But the name of that city had been Luz previously. Then Jacob made a vow saying, "If God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you." Three chapters later, Jacob's getting ready to leave his father-in-law, go out. God reminds him of that tenth that he promised. We do not know who gave the first tithe. It's not really all that important. It may have gone back to Adam's family. We do know that tithing and sacrificing has been part of culture since day one, and that's not just with the Israelites. Years before Jesus, 3800 to be exact, there was tithing by the pagan nations. Before Abraham, there was tithing. But let's get to the Jews and talk about them for just a minute and look at the example, because when we do talk about giving, we have direct examples of what God's people did. And I think most of the time we just think about it in terms of casually 10%. And the dollar or the percentage amount was much more than that. When Israel was camped at Mount Sinai, God gave him the rules that we see in Exodus. There were rules about everything. They were 10 commandments, they were laws, they were all of it. And so we've got the book of Exodus to look at to see that. When we look at the book of Leviticus, we kind of see the instruction manual, those rules and things that are laid out in a little bit different format. Who was in charge of the spiritual well-being of Israel, by the way? What tribe? Levites. So we've got a book that's an instruction manual for the Levites, how to take care of the Israelites on behalf of God. Exodus gives us the tabernacle. Leviticus teaches us how the tabernacle was used. When we go to Leviticus chapter 27, verse 30, this is a reminder, something that we've studied throughout this class. This is God concerning the Israelites. And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy to the Lord. Is there any question about what God expected of the Israelites? And I don't think that there is. It's a general command of all of Israel. In Numbers chapter 18, verse 21, "Behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tithes in Israel as an inheritance in return for the work which they perform, the work of the tabernacle of the meeting." Why did the Levites need this, by the way? What was different about the Levites in the overall scheme of how things were going to work out going through the promised land, that kind of thing? What was the difference? Dirks said they were not allowed to own property. They were only allowed to serve the Lord. They were God's priests. And when Israel was divided up into the land, who did not get a plot, a country? Levites. Well, I mean, does that make sense? Why was it that way? What was Israel, what were the Levites in charge of? All the sacrificing, all the things that had to do with paying homage to God, worshiping God. Where did you need Levites? If you were in a far western tribe, if you were in a far eastern tribe or a southern tribe or a northern tribe, who did you need? You need Levites. And if all the Levites were clustered in their own tribe, how is that going to work? The wisdom of God. And so the system is set up in order to fund the Levites so that they can do all the other things. Staying in Numbers, going forward to verse 26 through 28. "Speak thus to the Levites, say to them, when you take from the children of Israel the tithes which I have given you from them as your inheritance, then you shall offer up a heave offering of it to the Lord, a tenth of the tithe." So the tenth that was given to set to fund the works of the Levite tribe, they in turn had to give 10% of that back to God. "And your heave offering will be reckoned to you as though it were the grain of the threshing floor and as the fullness of the winepress. Thus you shall also offer a heave offering to the Lord from all your tithes which you receive from the children of Israel, and you shall give the Lord's heave offering from it to Aaron the priest." So, right off the top, 10%. That 10% went to the Levites. The Levites had to obey the same rules as everyone else. And so when they got that, they had to give 10% back to God. Pretty simple, right? Some exceptions. Let's say that you had the first of the flock, that perfect sacrifice animal, and that animal also happened to be your best plow animal. It happened to be the strongest animal you had. It could plow the field in less time, and it was the only one of that group that did a good job. And you needed to keep that animal. Could you do it? God said, "Give me back the first." Well, you could. You could redeem it. How much did it cost to redeem that good animal? You know? 1/5, 20%. So you give to God 10%, But if you have a reason, a good reason to keep an animal back, it's going to cost you 30% total to keep that particular animal and substitute another one in for the sacrifice. Leviticus chapter 27, verse 31. If a man wants to redeem his tithes, he shall add 1/5. God's expecting a lot, isn't he? Man, we start off at 10%, then I had to give 10% of the 10%, now I got to give 20%. Man, God, you leave me anything in my wallet? Well, that's unfortunately the way we think a lot of times, isn't it? And if we do, probably the Israelites did too. But what did God command? Because this is not about what we think. This is about what God said. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22. You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces each year. Go to verse 23. And you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide, the tithe of your grain and your new wine and your oil, are the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. Do you recognize what God has just instructed us in, or what instructed the Israelites rather, in that verse? Is that the tithe to give to the Levites? It is not. God said, give 10%, give that to the Levites. God said, give another 10%, and what you're going to do with that 10% is you're going to have a feast and you're going to remember where that 10% came from. What did I just read? 14:23? All right, make sure I'm in the right place. So, first thing that happens is 10%. Second thing that happens is another 10%, but this one is for you to go to Jerusalem with and to have a feast and to bless God. Now what are we up to? We're up to 20% unless you've got a redemption in there, and then we're up to 40%. God was serious about making sure that we recognize, that the Israelites recognize, just exactly how important it is to remember where those blessings come from. There was a way, and I'm not going to get into it necessarily, but if you lived a long way away from Jerusalem, you could take your tithe, you could sell it, take the money, go to Jerusalem, buy things while you were at Jerusalem, and then have your feast. God wanted them to do this regardless. And there were circumstances in which it might have been too far to travel and keep the sacrifice of their fruits, of the crops, etc., from spoiling. But God thought it was important for the Israelites to recognize this, and it is. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 27 through 29. You shall not forsake the Levite who is within your gates, for he has no part nor inheritance with you. And at the end of every third year, you shall bring out the tithe of your produce of that year and store it up within your gates. And the Levites, because he has no portion nor inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates, may come out and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in the work of your hand which you do. What's God taking care of right there? Who is God taking care of? If we were to say this today, what would we quote? What scripture would we quote? How about this one? Do good unto all, but especially to those of the household of faith. So, let's go back and keep track. We got 10% for the Levites. We've got another 10% to recognize who God is. We've got another 10% every third year for benevolence. Tithing times 3, right? We're up to 30%. This is what God expects. More than perhaps we thought that the Israelites had to do. Leviticus chapter 19, 9. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. Well, wait a minute, God. I thought once we got through with the first 10%, well, no, we got to do the second 10%. Well, okay, every third year I got to do the third 10%. The rest of it's mine, right? Well, sort of, kind of, but not exactly. What does this say? Got to leave something for everybody else. Two things are at play. First, a portion of the crop is to be left untouched for the poor. Second, when the harvest falls on the ground, don't go back and pick it back up. Who do we know that harvested, that gleaned around the edges of the field? Yeah, Ruth. What a great story that is. She goes to Boaz, and Boaz says, look, to his reapers, you leave stuff out there for Ruth to go get, right? You give her a chance. She needs some of this stuff. We all need some of that stuff from one time or another, right? It's a great story about Ruth and Boaz. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 19 and 20. When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the works of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. Wait a minute, God. Every third year, I'm supposed to give an extra 10%. That should cover those folks, right? We know better, don't we? If we're not going to do something good for our fellow man, who is? And that's the point God's trying to make. Some of you, if you're my age, your parents probably were Great Depression parents. Some of you had parents who grew up in the Great Depression, right? Did that impact them in ways that's hard to explain? It certainly did my mom and dad. They had a look about things regarding finances that was driven by that experience of the Great Depression. And I guess if there's one word that I could use to describe them, it would be frugal. Does that word work? I think it does. You know, my dad always had a garden. And he would say, Richard, go out and pick some peas. And I'd go out there and pick some peas. And I'd come back. And if you grew up in the South and you picked peas, how did you measure them? Do you remember? By the mess. Now, a mess is not defined, by the way, of peas. It's just peas. It's enough to eat for whatever that particular event is. So a mess might be a handful. A mess might be a bushel. It depends on the circumstance. But he'd say, go pick some peas. And I'd come back in. I'd give him some peas. He said, did you clean that row out? Well, yes, Dad, I cleaned that row out. I roll, paper sack. Daddy goes to the garden, comes back with a lot more peas than I brought in the first time. No, son, you didn't clean out that row of peas. Now, if I had been smarter as a child, I would have said, Dad, I'm leaving them for the poor because they're going to walk through the garden and pick them tonight. But I wasn't. And I should. You know how it goes with that kind of stuff. But what's God telling us? We've got to take care of everybody else. We take care of ourselves, and we take care of others as we have the chance to do that. Exodus chapter 22, verse 29. You shall not delay to offer the first of your ripe produce and your juices. This concept of first fruits that we read about, what does that mean? What do farmers do? They go out, they till the land, they plant. They pray a lot during growing season for rain, right? They get to the harvest and, you know, there's this understanding that God has blessed you with all the rain and things it takes to make those crops grow, but you get to a certain point and maybe the rain hasn't been as much as is really you needed to have a bumper crop, and so you're counting on every last piece of grain that comes through. And then you stop, and the first part goes to God. And maybe that bothers you a little bit if your attitude's a little bit wrong, because you don't have as much this year as you had before. It didn't rain as much. It was too hot. The wind blew. The varmints came through and ate all the grain. All those kind of things that happen. And so I don't have as much. I can't make as much money this year going to market with all this stuff because I just don't have as much. So I'm going to hold back and only give God 5%. What did God say do? That first that comes off, that firstborn, that first crop, you've got it because God blessed you with it. Even though it might not have been as much as it was the year before, it's still a blessing from God, and God expects us to take care of that in a prompt way. Have you ever loaned anybody money and they said they'd pay you back next week, and next week rolled around and they didn't do it? And you said, well, I'll give them another week, and then waited another week and another week and another week. How many of you remember an old cartoon, a character named Wimpy? Anybody remember Wimpy? Wimpy was always trying to borrow money. Remember that? He said, I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. That was his line. Wimpy never paid, by the way. He just kept borrowing to buy that hamburger. We need to be prompt with this. We need to understand that what we get is a blessing from God, and we need to be happy in order to give it back. There were also voluntary offerings that were made at the feast. Look at the last part of this particular verse in Deuteronomy chapter 16. Every man shall give as he is able, and they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessings of the Lord your God, which he has given to you. You know, the Israelites were commanded to observe several different feasts throughout the year, and those feasts had to do with things of blessings from God in order to make sure that they gave back to God. Don't come to those feasts empty-handed. They're here for a reason, for you to remember where your blessings come from. And then a few verses earlier, then you shall keep the feast of the weeks to the Lord your God with the tribute of a freewill offering from your hand, which you shall give as the Lord your God blesses you. Malachi, in the last book of the Old Testament, probably the last book written in the Old Testament before God was silent for those 400 years, takes a different viewpoint with the Israelites by saying, you have been thieves. You have robbed God. Malachi chapter 3, verse 8 through 12, will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me, but you say, in what way have we robbed you? In tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. And try me now in this, says the Lord of hosts. If I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out to you such blessings that there will not be enough room to receive it. That's a powerful message. God is saying, you don't consider where your blessings come from. You don't trust me. And I'm telling you, if you'll trust me, I will bless you beyond that which you can imagine. I will put in your storehouses more than those storehouses can hold. That's the God that we serve. And when it comes to this issue of stewardship, a lot of times it comes down to, well, most of the time, it comes down just to a matter of trust. Do we trust God to take care of us? And I would ask you in answering that question to look backwards and say, have I ever seen a time when He didn't take care of me through thick and thin? So, we've got the levels, right? We've got 10%, we've got another 10%, we've got a third year 10%, we can redeem for 20%, and on top of all that other stuff, we just need to leave the fields and leave a little extra. We need to make sure that anybody can come through and take whatever it is they need in order to be able to get along. Somewhere, and although I have not used it in particular in class this morning, this concept, though, becomes pretty evident that our giving needs to be sacrificial. God says, Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 2, give as we have been prospered. Are we given enough, by the way, to get by? I think so. I think most of the time that we are. And I think when we don't see it that way, we probably should step back and just reevaluate. In Numbers chapter 24, and if you've got your Bible, because I don't have this up for the screen, in Numbers chapter 24, there is a story about David. The story also is told in 1 Chronicles 21. And it's a story about David ordering a census. We don't really know exactly why this census angered God. You can think of several different reasons perhaps why it would. Perhaps it was an ego thing. Perhaps David ordered this census so that he could look back on all the things that he had done and then give himself credit for it. I don't know. David told Joab to go out and count the people. And Joab says, I don't want to do it. It's going to anger God if I do this. Please don't make me do this. David had his way. Joab had to go out and count the people, and Joab did. And we see that census taking place in 1 Chronicles 21 and 2 Samuel 24. So Joab goes out and does this. It takes about 10 months for Joab to do it. And he comes back, and he's going to give David the results of that census. And if we look in chapter 2 Samuel 24, verse 10, and David's heart condemned him after he had numbered the people. So David said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. But now I pray, O Lord, take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done foolishly. David recognized the problem that he had created. And he asked for forgiveness. And God sent Gad the prophet to him and said, look, one of three things needs to happen. I can give you to your enemies for an extended period of time. Look in, let's just read that. Verse 12. Go and tell David, thus says the Lord, I offer you three things. Choose one of them for yourself that I may do it for you. So Gad came to David and said, shall 7 years of famine come to you through your land, or shall you flee 3 months before your enemies while they pursue you, or shall you there be 3 days of plague in your land? Now consider what the answer is that I should take back to him who sent me. David's decision is to put himself in the hands of God, not in the hands of man. And so a plague is sent. Do you know how many people died during that plague? 70,000 people. And David says, God, this is not what I bargained for. I'm the one who did the wrong thing here. Why are you killing these people? Or why is this plague happening that has killed these people? And about the time that the angel is about to put his hand over Jerusalem and destroy that, in response to David's prayer, God says, stop. It is enough. Go tell David to make a sacrifice. And David makes that sacrifice. Now, turn to 2 Samuel 24, starting in verse 19. So David, according to the word of Gad, went up to the Lord as commanded. Now a rhino looked around and saw the king and his servants coming towards him. So he went out and he bowed before the king with his face to the ground. Then a rhino said, "Why has my lord the king come to his servant?" And David said, "To buy the threshing floor from you, to build an altar to the Lord, that the plague may be withdrawn from the people." Now a rhino said to David, "Let my lord the king take and offer up whatever seems good to him. Look, here are oxen for a burnt sacrifice and threshing implements and the yokes of the oxen for wood. All of these, O king, have been given to the king." And a rhino said to the king, "May the Lord your God accept you." Then the king said to a rhino, "No, but I will surely buy it from you for a price, nor will I offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God with that which cost me nothing." That is what sacrificial giving is about. David wouldn't do it. He recognized he had made several mistakes. He wasn't going to compound that mistake by taking that gift and then giving that gift as if though it were a sacrifice to God. And there's a big lesson there for us. We have to put God first in all things. Have you ever re-gifted something? Have you ever gone to a Christmas party and you've taken a gift that maybe somebody gave you? We all do that from time to time. We don't have any skin in that game though, do we? That's a little lighthearted look at something like that. When it comes to giving God, David was not going to re-gift that which he had been given. Giving helps us to take care of those who cannot take care of themselves. Offerings teach us the giver to respect. Faithful Jews, offerings were made to God that would bless the giver. Faithful Jews gave 20% per year and 30% every third year. Where our heart is will also be our gift. God blesses us with everything that we have. It is from Him. Our giving is expected to be sacrificial. What is the very first commandment? Exodus chapter 20, verse 3. "You shall have no other gods before me." What is before God in our sight? Because where our stewardship is, where our giving is, has got to be with God first. And in Matthew chapter 20, verse 32, Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." God expects us to recognize that regardless of what the circumstance is, God is first in all things. All right. The bell. Question or comments real quick, 30 seconds. Thank you. Appreciate your time.